Well, I hope that we're all experiencing something in the presence of God in doing our leap of faith. I continue to receive the stories. I love the stories. We're continuing to talk about how to share them. And one of the things that's really struck me about doing the leap of faith is that it's not only been hearing stories about how God has been answering prayer, but it's been the things God has been doing as people have been praying. It's been the unexpected things that have come up as people have begun to pray and think about what God is doing and the side things and that they never expected God to do. And I love those stories as well. I think what it struck me is that it's not just about sort of this end result where we ask God for something and he does something. It's about the journey and it's about the process and it's about opening our hearts and our desires to God and seeing him show up and engage us where we are. I think that's an awesome process. I think that's an awesome experience. And so I'm really glad that God's doing that. Now, one specific thing I want to address about doing the leap of faith that I personally have experienced is that now that we're past the halfway point, there's sort of a way that the newness of it has worn off. You know, it's like, yeah, leap of faith, yeah. It's like, leap of faith, yeah. You know, or now some people are really into it, others. Even this last week, I found that there were a couple of days where I actually did not pray for myself, my six, or the church. And I look back on it and I realize, wow, I got really distracted. I got refocused. I got absorbed in something else. And I lost sight of that. Now, I'm sure that's happened to none of you. I'm sure that rarely happens to any of us in the Silicon Valley. But I noticed what my first response to that was. My first response was to beat myself up for that. Because that's like, hey, you're the pastor, man. You can't fail. And not only that, you're trying to lead people in this. How do you expect other people to do it if you fail and go asleep at the wheel? And all of a sudden, I realized when I did that, my enthusiasm for the leap of faith diminished. Have you ever noticed that? You start to beat yourself up over something, all of a sudden you're like, well, this is no fun. Because most of us, when we're in our best, don't like to be beaten up by ourselves or by others. And so we tend to stop. And I want to encourage us not to do that. Maybe you've had an experience where it hasn't been that fresh for you, or you've stopped, or you've become discouraged. I want to encourage you to renew your zeal for it for the next 2 weeks. And to come to Jesus, and even if you feel like I'm feeling lame because I haven't been doing it every day, allow Jesus to speak forgiveness, mercy, peace, release, to just go for it for the rest, for these next 2 weeks, to finish strong. And one specific way I want to encourage us to do that is to rejoice with those who experience God answering their prayers. How many of you have ever had the experience of where you're praying for something or there's something you want to have happen in your life and it's not happening, but then someone has that exact prayer answered in their life? And of course, being the spiritual dynamos we all are, what we do is we stand up, do a little dance and go, good for you, yay! While in our hearts, we go, God didn't do that for me. Why didn't he do that for me? We find that urge, that temptation not to celebrate what God is doing. And let me just tell you right here, that is the essence of why living in community, following Jesus together is a spiritual battle. Because there's nothing the enemy wants more than for us not to celebrate what's happening in each other's lives. Right? What he wants us to do is when we see something good happen for somebody else, the enemy wants to go, yeah, why isn't God doing that for you? Huh? This is like my kid. When I'm sitting out here trying to talk to one of you and she wants my attention, she just needles me right here, right in the love handle, you know, and just pushes me. That's what the enemy does. Just like boom, boom, boom. Look, he's not doing that for you. The enemy goes right for both my love handles though. So, and he goes, why isn't God doing this for you? What's going on? And all of a sudden we don't celebrate what's happening in each other's lives. Some of us are experiencing some real pain and difficulty in our lives. I believe God is also challenging and encouraging and wooing us to celebrate with others, even in the midst of that. That there's something that God wants us to do and understand that this is a spiritual battle. This is not a physical battle where we just notch who gets the most prayers answered. This is about finding our hearts transformed, where we are more and more in love with Jesus and confident that he has our best in mind no matter what is happening in our lives. That is the journey we are on. That is the struggle that we all face. I am so excited to see how God will continue to grow our faith because we are doing this leap of faith. How God will open our eyes even in these last 2 weeks. I want to encourage you to join me in that, to resist the opposition, to resist that temptation, to either not celebrate what we hear or experience from others, or to think, oh, I'm just lame because I'm not doing it. I want to pray for us in that now. So I'm going to pray, and I invite you to pray along with me if you find that resonating for you. Jesus, we come to you now, and we know that we want to. Everyone here wants to be able to pray and to engage and to receive from you every day. We want that. We come here this morning because we want to receive from you and be blessed by you. We want more of you. And yet we find it difficult. Sometimes we find it difficult to make the time. We become distracted or we become focused on other things. And other times when we hear what's happening in other people's lives, we hold back even our own ability to celebrate because we're bummed that something is not happening for us. Jesus, I ask you to open the doors and set us free. Set us free this morning. Set us free to not be shackled to the ways we haven't performed in the past, and allow us to pray with zeal for the things that you've put on our hearts for ourselves, for our six, and for the church. And I ask that you would renew our zeal and love and passion for celebrating with one another the ways we see you be faithful, especially in ways that we could never do for ourselves. I speak against the lie that when someone does something wonderful for someone else, it is a statement of his disregard for us. We reject that. We ask you to break the power of that and to free us to become a people who can celebrate and rejoice with one another. Come, Jesus, bless this morning. Bless the hearing of your word. Bless our time together, our worship and our prayer in your name. Amen. During this leap of faith, as most of you know, we've been studying the book of Hebrews, and we've been looking at the heroes of faith, the people that the writer of Hebrews puts up as people that we would want to emulate as heroes of faith. And today we're talking about the person Moses. Let me read for you the section in Hebrews that talks about the person of Moses. This is also in your program, and it's on the screen behind me. By faith, Moses was hidden by his parents for 3 months after his birth, because they saw that the child was beautiful, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called a son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to share ill treatment with the people of God, rather to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered abuse suffered for the Christ to be greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking ahead to the reward. By faith, he left Egypt, unafraid of the king's anger, for he persevered as though he saw him who is invisible. By faith, he kept the Passover and sprinkling of the blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. Those five verses took me about 37 seconds to read. Those five verses cover 80 years of a person's life. Moses lived to be 120. What I just wrote right there is 80 years. That's a lot packed into five lines, don't you think? That is about the equivalent of our life right now. I mean, you know, I don't know what the actual life expectancy is, but 80 years is a pretty good stretch for us in this period right now. And this is where Moses is by the end of these five verses. He is an amazing character. He is worthy of his own series. I think we're going to have to find a time to come back to him because the complexities of his life are absolutely amazing. But I want to talk about the thing that happens here where the writer chooses to write about Moses, identifying four faith moments. And it's important to define here that the author has already defined what faith is. Faith is the assurance of things in the future, an assurance of things to come, a conviction of things unseen. That faith is by definition a faith and a confidence that something's going to happen that has not happened. And so he says these are these four times, and his assertion is that it was this kind of faith. Now let's be clear here, the New Testament writer, the Hebrews here, he's writing after Jesus has lived and died and resurrected, right? But he's now writing about this image of faith about someone who never even knew Jesus, hundreds of years before Jesus. And he is attributing this same idea of faith or trust in Jesus to this person, Moses. Let's look at these four faith events. The first faith event the writer of Hebrews mentions is not even about the faith of Moses. It's the faith of his parents. Now that's really interesting, isn't it? He's got a little time. He wants to identify four major faith events in Moses' life. And the first one is the faith of his parents. And what's happened there is that the people of Israel, if you know a little bit about their history, they have come into Egypt through one of Moses' ancestors, a guy named Joseph. Joseph came to Egypt, became very powerful in Egypt because he helped Egypt avoid a famine. The Egyptians were very happy about this. Joseph eventually brings his whole family into Egypt. They settle there. Everything's cool. But then, of course, Joseph and all the rulers of Egypt at that time die. And they move on, and the people of Israel flourish, the Hebrew nation flourishes, and the Egyptians become scared. And so they enslave the Hebrew people. They make them slaves. They continue to thrive. They grow. The Egyptians get more scared. Because when you're in power and you oppress someone, the oppressed might rebel and overthrow you. And so they're afraid that the Hebrews are going to come, side with one of their neighbors who don't like them, and destroy the Egyptians. So the Pharaoh gets a cool idea. He says, guess what? He goes to the Hebrew midwives who evidently deliver all these two midwives. I still don't quite get this. They deliver all the babies for the entire nation of all the Hebrews. Thousands, millions of them. I'm like, how does that work? Anyway, he goes to them and he says, I want you to kill all the boys that are born. Miraculously, because of some faith that they have, they don't do it. And then they deliver this baby Moses, and the parents hide the baby. And it says it was by their faith because they were not afraid of the king's edict. What struck me about this is that initially, here before Moses even demonstrates any faith of his own, we see the impact of the faith of his parents. What strikes me about this is that for each one of us here, our faith, or whatever faith we have, has been influenced by the faith of others. Somewhere, whether it was our parents, or whether it was a friend, or whether it was a spouse, or someone else, we have been influenced by, and people's own faith and the way they live that out had an impact on us. And the same is true right now. The way you live out your faith, the impact of your faith, of you acting in faith, in trust in God, has influence on the people around you. I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a moment. Faith event number two, Moses ends up becoming a prince in Pharaoh's house. Okay, this story is crazy. I kid you not, if you haven't read it, I am not making this up. I mean, this is good fodder for television. As a matter of fact, it's on television right now. There's a series called The Bible. It's really good. I'm taping it. I think you should watch it. It's very interesting. But this story is fascinating because what happens is Moses' parents put him in a little basket, push him down the river. He ends up getting adopted by Pharaoh's family, by Pharaoh's daughter. Weirdly enough, Pharaoh's daughter can't raise him, probably because she's not had a baby. She doesn't breastfeed. So they figure out a way to get Moses' mom to do that. So Moses' mom essentially raises Moses as a child in Pharaoh's house. So he becomes a dual citizen. He learns about the Hebrew background, but he also becomes a prince in the house of Pharaoh. Incredibly powerful, while also knowing the history of his own people, the Hebrews. And then one day, a critical moment comes up. He's walking around like people in authority do. And they're just walking around looking at things. And he sees a taskmaster in Egypt beating a guy down who's a Hebrew slave. And he snaps. He just loses it. In that moment, what happens for him is all the stories about how the Hebrews have been oppressed by the Egyptians, all the ways that his people have been treated poorly over and over, it comes to him and he has a decision to make. Will I ultimately choose the side of the Egyptians and all the power and prestige and comfort that that gives me? Or will I identify with my people, the Hebrews? And he makes a choice. And he makes it fairly dramatically. He makes it by killing the overseer. He knows it's wrong because the scripture is really interesting. It tells us he goes like this. You know, it's like, oh yeah, this is wrong. He looks around, right? He knows this isn't the right thing to do. He hides the body. But I think in his mind, he thinks, I've made a decision. I am now going to help the Hebrew people. I'm ready to go because of faith incident number three. He comes out the next day, I think, feeling pretty good about himself. He has made a decision to separate himself from the Egyptians and all the power of his upbringing and to go now and to identify with his Hebrew people. But he's still thinking as someone who has power. So he comes up to these two Hebrew slaves, and I love this. And he says to them, he says, they're fighting and they're going at it. And so he says to them, hey, you should stop fighting. And one of the Hebrew guys turns to him and goes, why? What are you going to do if I don't? Are you going to kill me too? Ooh, right? He realizes they know. Somehow they saw him kill this Egyptian taskmaster guy. And now the Hebrews all know. But guess what? They're not excited. I mean, what would you think? If I was this big, you know, you'd think like, oh man, the Hebrews are going to love me. I am like slaughtering Egyptians. I'm on the side of the Hebrews. No, they reject him. They reject him because he's a prince in Egypt and they don't know what his intentions are. And they just think he's going to kill them too. This must absolutely blow Moses' mind. And at this moment, he has his biggest life decision he's ever, probably he ever has to make, but it's certainly he has no idea how big it is. Because at that moment, he has to decide, will I go back to the Pharaoh, beg for mercy, or will I go run? Now let's face it. If you're an Egyptian and you're a prince in the house of Egypt, and you go out and you kill an Egyptian who's just a slave sort of manager, do you think it's really improbable that you could go back to your father and go, hey, sorry, Gramps, I lost it. I killed this guy. Now I gotta imagine the Egyptians have millions and millions of slaves. I just cannot believe Pharaoh's like, oh man, that was just so wrong. Remember, this is a Pharaoh who killed boys that were born to the Egyptians because he wanted to keep the population low. I believe that at that moment, Moses could have gone back and renegotiated his status in the house of Egypt. He could have said, I want back in. And Pharaoh would have said, okay, just don't do it again. But he doesn't. He doesn't. He has made a decision to stick by his convictions and his principles. He realizes that what Pharaoh and the nation of Egypt was doing to the Hebrews was wrong, and he is willing to stick by it and not cover his own behind and go back and live a life of comfort and prestige and power. That is an amazing decision. And what the author of Hebrews tells us, that decision is made by faith. It's made by trust in God, that God is going to take care of him. That he doesn't have to grab for himself, he doesn't have to go back to Egypt, enter back into the palace, and assume the power of the Pharaoh. But what really makes this killer is, he doesn't have anywhere to go. He was a man 2 days ago who had two peoples. He had two peoples. He was an Egyptian, and he was a Hebrew. But now, 2 days later, he has no peoples. He's not an Egyptian or a Hebrew. Neither one of them want him. And so what does he do? Moses runs into the outback. He runs into the absolute, the farthest area away and becomes a shepherd for 40 years. Mind-boggling. I don't even know if we can wrap our minds around the descent that that must have been. You are the prince. You are maybe in line to be the ruler of the most powerful nation in the world. President of the United States or whatever. And all of a sudden, in 2 days, that is gone, and you are living on a mountain somewhere in Utah, right? Nowhere. You're herding goats. Your life has changed so dramatically. Now, we're probably never going to face the situation Moses is in here. But we will, my experience is, you do have a handful of those over the course of your life. Maybe you can think of those. Situations that were big, huge decisions that you had to make. But the question comes, how do you become the person of faith? How do you have the kind of faith to make a big decision to stand by your conviction when the stakes are really high? How do you become like that? And my answer is, through 1,000 smaller decisions in the days leading up to that moment. We don't have that recorded, but it's the thousands of other decisions and the ways that Moses has put his faith or his trust or has seen or has heard or has experienced the goodness of God that allows him to make the decision right there. I got to experience this in a powerful way this last weekend. To experience how becoming a person like Moses is the culmination and the combination of 1,000 smaller moments of faith. Yesterday was the woman's half day prayer retreat. A number of you were probably there. I heard it was a really good time. And my wife was there. And so it was me and my three kids. And it was going to be a nice day. We actually had someone to help take care of Joshua, but she showed up sick. So I sent her home. So I had all three kids. He had a swimming lesson. We go to the swimming lesson. Find out my girls are stoked. Let's go swimming. So she goes, I go, really? Because the idea of three of my kids together with me in the pool, none of them who are cleared to actually swim, is a little scary. Because I'm imagining the end of the day and having to report back to Susan, we're down one. So we go anyway. Josh gets his lessons. I'm swimming with the girls. We're having a great time. Josh gets out of his lesson. He comes over. We're actually doing it. We're all three of us are in the pool together. It's very fun. Then it gets even better. One of Anna's friends from school shows up. And it's like awesome, right? You know, because for those of you who have not hung out with little kids or been in this, it's like when you're a parent, up to this moment, Anna has wanted me to watch everything she does, right? Everything she does is something worthy of daddy's attention. Watch me blow bubbles. Watch me turn upside down. Watch me put my head down. Watch me do that, right? This girl shows up. Daddy is a vapor. Doesn't even matter, right? It's like I'm down one now, but she's still alive, which is good. So they're playing and they're doing their thing. And I'm talking with the mom and we're having a good time. And her name is Maura. And for those of you who've heard me do this before, this is not her real name. And what I'm going to hope to do is get through this story without giving her real name. If you're new or visiting, that is a problem that I've had, and I'm going to work on that. So Moore actually watches the girls for a minute while I go to wash and shower Joshua. I come back out with Joshua, and literally I'm coming over to get Anna and Hope. And as I bend down, Moore is there with her two kids and Anna. And Anna looks up at me and goes, "Hey, Dad, are you going to invite Moore and her family to our Easter celebration?" And there are so many things I would love to tell you that I said in that moment. But in my absolutely inspired brilliance, this was my best response. I guess I am now. That's actually what I said. Wow. Here's the kicker. I said that, and then I didn't even invite her. I said, I guess I am now. And then I stood in this awkwardness like, and I wanted to do that sort of science fiction thing where you peel your own body off yourself and you walk away. Cockroaches were crawling all over me. I just blown the whole moment. So I get my girls up. I take them to the shower. We move on. And it just bugged me. It bugged me to no end. I thought, what was so hard about that? Anna opened the door. All I had to say was, yeah, that'd be great. We would love to have you come to our Easter celebration. We have a really fun breakfast. People bring food, either things they liked when they were celebrating Easter or maybe from their ethnic or cultural background. Of course, you're a guest, so you don't have to bring it, right? You know, but we'd love to have you come. Our kids are in a program and our kids would be together. And it's great. And there's a treasure hunt afterwards. We'd love to have your family come. This is not hard for me. Why couldn't I do that? It would have been that easy. The mom's response or my concerns of her response was not the issue. Anna saying something was not the issue. Being in the pool was not the issue, right? Like it's not a good time. The issue front and center was my fear. My fear of making her uncomfortable. Maybe my fear of saying something that would change how she would perceive me. Maybe my fear of not wanting drop-offs at school to be awkward for the rest of time because of this weird interaction. Whatever it was, they were all fears of mine about how this was going to go. I was so afraid of these things that in the split second that Anna asked that question, I lost complete and total touch with the fact that Jesus loves this woman and her family, that he wants them to know how much he cares for them. He wants them to experience and taste the things that I have experienced by being in relationship with God. I lost complete touch with that, and my fears became bigger than their experience of this great God. This was my moment on a much smaller scale to realize that this family experiencing the love of Jesus was way more important than how I perceive myself or how I come across. This was like Moses when he had that moment and he goes, do I go back? Do I just try to protect who I am? Or am I willing to express what is true? What I know to be true about my life and about this world? My prayer for this morning is that this truth, this idea of Jesus' great compassion and love for people, including myself, would overwhelm, overtake my heart, and become so much more important to me than how I look or appear to the people that I interact with each day. And it is the grace of Jesus. It is His life and death, the very thing that we will celebrate in 2 weeks, that frees me to do that, right? Because you know, the main thing that could happen is in that moment, I could just feel dejected and walk away, right? But by His grace and His mercy, that wasn't the end of the story. So what happens is, I feel so bummed about this, but I get the idea, you know what? I can still talk to them. So we go get in the car, and then I start driving around, and we're at the YMCA, I start driving around the parking lot looking for them, like when they're going to come out. I know. At some point it dawns on me, there's people in there exercising, seeing me circle the building. And I'm sure they think I'm going to like blow the place up or something like that. I'm thinking, wow, this is really weird. So I drive around and I actually tell the kids what I'm doing. I say, you know what? I think that interaction went really poorly with Maura. And I want to try to make it better. So I'm going to wait and catch them on the way out and we're going to talk to them. They're like, all right, whatever. And so we drive around. Finally, Anna gets so tired. She's like, I'm done with this. I'd like to go home now, please. I'm like, all right, fair enough. So I go, I probably missed them anyway. We pull out of one parking lot. We drive down the street. We're just about past the other parking lot. What do you think happens? I see them getting into their car. Throw the car into a turn. We go back. They're like, what's going on? I saw them. And I drive in. And as I drive in, they're already in the car. They're reversing the car. Yeah, I love it. I got you people nervous. This is awesome. Ooh, what's he going to do? Ooh. That's the end of the story. So anyway, what happens is I have this amazing moment right then. The moment hits me. Oh my gosh, I've missed my opportunity. They're in the car. For some reason, it appears to me that this is a chasm that cannot be crossed. And I realize it's a very spiritual moment. It's a moment where I feel that opposition. I have the chance now, in the mercy of God, in the forgiveness of God, not feeling bad about myself, but in an opportunity to do it again, to take a risk, to have some faith. And I feel the moment, the voice in my head say, the moment has passed. I don't think that was Jesus. I think that was the opposition. And so, I keep driving and I start to drive out of the parking lot. I turn the loop, and this is where, in an amazing sequence of events, my daughter Anna asks me, hey Dad, what are you doing? That's them right there. And I say, I know Anna, we've missed our opportunity. They're in the car. And then a voice comes to me, and I believe this was the voice of God, but it was coming out of the mouth of my daughter. And she literally says to me, and this is an absolute quote, I'm going to find it because I need to read this. She says, I had to write this down. Dad, talk to them. Just pull the car over and talk to them. Don't be a scaredy cat. I love it. The ultimate Christian rebuke. Don't be a scaredy cat. Man, I throw that car over into a parking lot. I get out of the car. I start walking towards their car. It wasn't as ominous as it sounds. I put my hand up and she rolls down the window and she says, hey, you're still here. And I, in my mind, I decide to leave the stalking part out of it. And I go, yeah. And, I lean down. I put my head to the window and I say, I got to tell you. I felt really bad about our interaction at the pool. I think I really mishandled that. Anna said a very normal thing, and I didn't follow up on that, and it made it sound as if I wasn't really excited about having you come to our church, and nothing could be farther from the truth. And I just wanted you to know that that I would love to have you and your family come and visit us on Easter. And I began to tell some of the things that I said earlier about our breakfast and about the treasure hunt and where we meet. And she said, wow, that's really nice. And okay. And I realized I didn't have an invitation at the time, but I'm going to give her one tomorrow when I drop my kids off at school. And then she drove off. And then we got in the car and then we drove home. Now, remember the first moment for Moses when he was newly born? I mentioned that our faith or choosing to fear can affect others. Here was a moment that in reflection really struck me in relationship to my daughter. My decision in that moment in the car was going to have some impact on her. And what it was going to communicate either directly or indirectly is whether or not it is a good thing to have faith and even step through your fear to take a risk like talking to someone, or she was going to get the message that you should just be a scaredy cat. And we don't always make the right decisions, but I can tell you I am glad and happy today that my daughter got to see me not be a scaredy cat. And I can't wait to talk about this when she's a little older and when she'll care about all the details. Because after I talked to Maura, she didn't even ask me how it went. She was like, I'm in my book now. So, but I can't wait for that because I believe it said something to her. And I believe it says something to us. I believe this story says something to you this morning. And I believe what people see from you matters to them. I felt a couple things in that moment. I felt the grace of God for being able to get back into that conversation and to allow faith, even a leap of faith, to triumph over fear. I love it that the final interaction was not by the pool, but the final interaction was standing in a parking lot outside the Y. To grow and have a heart for people like that. I believe he wants that for each one of us. But notice that it's going to take things like us being willing to step through fears to initiate, to even respond when we make mistakes. Mistakes will happen. I make them regularly. But the question is what we do with it when it happens. I felt God's mercy in allowing me to come back to and complete that interaction. The second thing was I became aware of how completely unprepared I am to be as natural in talking about Jesus by the side of a pool as I am on a stage on a Sunday morning. I can't believe it. I can stand up here and be so comfortable. Why? Because, I don't know. Maybe because it's not really a dialogue. I'm just talking to you. And there's no risk, you know? I don't know. But all of a sudden I saw the difference between that and what I want is I want the freedom and the joy and the capability to talk about Jesus in the way that I can now when I'm standing with someone by the side of a pool at the YMCA. And I want that for every one of us, whether it's where we work, where we live, where we shop, that we are able in just real ways where we can talk about the things that matter to us, where we can invite people to come to be with us, where we can share about even the mistakes we've made and how we want to make them right. I'm not there, and I'm willing to bet that some of us are not there yet either. And that's why even in this next time as we begin to worship, I want to really invite you to allow the music and the songs to drip down into your soul. It can be tempting in worship to just sing the songs, to read the words, to do whatever, to think about lunch. But I want to encourage you to use this time to allow the goodness of God, the truth about the kingdom, to drip down into your soul. Because it's when the kingdom takes over, when it gets down into the depths of who we are, that we're able to enter in and be people of faith, even people of faith when we make mistakes, because we know that God loves us. We know that he cares about us. We know that he's not watching us happy when we make mistakes, but eager to help us back up and to even enter back in and see him redeem it. This is why I love our mission. I love our mission that it's to receive and respond and risk. Because we understand that we need to receive from God deeply and thoroughly in order to be able to respond when the time comes, and even sometimes to risk in a way that will feel scary because God is in it and God is shaping us and transforming us to be more like himself. That risk may not be talking to someone by a pool. That risk may be taking more time to actually connect with Jesus during the week. It may be, I don't know, what is God saying to you? But I know and can picture the beauty of this happening in all of our lives as we become a people that are operating more and more out of faith and less out of fear. That's what I want to see for myself and for our church. And so I just want to say one tangible way that you can do that in these next 2 weeks as we sort of finish strong in the leap of faith is to actually consider inviting your six or people around you, the people you're praying for, to come to the Easter celebration. We have a number of those invitations. I have a bunch with me just in case we ran out. They're on the back thing. They're on the info table. I want to encourage you that one of the ways to tangibly bless and care for the six that you're praying for is to invite them to come to Easter. Perhaps you already have something else you're doing with them or something in mind. But I guarantee we are going to do our best to make it a place where people who don't know a lot about the church and who are trying to understand or even just slightly interested come and have an experience of God for themselves. You're already aware we're going to have this light breakfast before. Our service is slightly shorter. It's about an hour and 15 minutes. And next Sunday, I'm going to give you a glimpse of what I'm going to talk about in church on Easter so that you can have some confidence about what's going to be said. And that can even bolster your confidence to invite other people. My interaction with Maura showed me that it's no big deal to invite our friends to come to church. My experience has been, as I've been inviting people, every time I invite someone, they feel honored that I invited them. And what blows my mind is I'm still astounded by that. No, people like to be invited. As long as they can say no, people like to be invited, to be included. And I'm going to give her that invitation tomorrow when I go to school. And I have others to give. Will you join me in inviting, in being able to step through, like Moses did, whatever it is, to make it one of your 1,000 acts of faith, of trust in Jesus? Because each one of those will build and will grow and will flourish your life of faith so that when those bigger crisis moments, when those bigger difficulties come, you will be ready to choose based on trust and confidence in God and not fear.